Kelly Cates was going there afterwards. When can we rule Man United out of this conversation that we're having about the top four? We're having a conversation about top four because Aston Villa are playing. It's nothing to do with the United Brentford game that's coming up. We can already answer that question. We can already talk about when Man United are out of the top four. No, it's not going to happen. Man United cannot catch Aston Villa.
Tim Sherwood here. You're listening to the Villa Podcast.
That morning sky gave me a look, so I left while you were sleeping. That's all it took.
And I chalked the line. Every time you see a group of fixtures together, you start thinking, how many points can we get from that? You know, can we get a win there? Can we get a win there? I'll take a draw there. Every time I see Wolves in this group of five fixtures, you know, I know, we all think the same. It's like, oh, we just take the point there and we'll move on. That'll be a good one. Well, we didn't just take the point there in this game. And it wasn't like we smashed and grabbed it. I can't remember the last time we outplayed Wolves. And in the build-up to this match, I was having that fear. I was thinking, you know, a point would be okay. I don't want the point, but I can't see anything else because I don't remember the last time we beat Wolves. Was it El Ghazi's penalty? Probably. But even in that game, I still had that feeling that they were all over us. They were running over the top of us. They had us worked out, and I needed some sort of solace. So in the build-up to this match, I found myself Googling. I went onto the website Quora. Remember that from back in the day, the old Reddit? And I typed in, who would win a fight between a lion and a wolf? Who would win a fight between the Aston Villa Lions and the Wolverhampton Wolves? And it said, it came back and said, in a hypothetical fight between a lion and a wolf. And I went back and said, no, I mean in an actual fight. Who would win a fight between a lion and a wolf? Came back and said the lion would likely have the advantage due to its larger size and strength. Lions are apex predators and are known for their powerful hunting abilities. And we are on the hunt, Liam. Emmy Martinez has just tweeted, he said, 8 finals left. And somebody else did chime in as well and said the lion would devour the wolf. And I have to agree, because we did devour Gary O'Neill's Wolves.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like you, Connor. Not that there's very much I can do about that at this stage. I haven't spent 15 of the first 18 years of my life in the same bedroom as you. You weren't able to speak for 2 of those, but you've more than made up for that now. Anyway, I don't want the words I'm going to say to sound like something you might say, but those first 20 minutes were low-key the worst 20 minutes under Unai Emery, I think. And I'm not surprised you turned to Quora. I'm surprised you didn't turn to it again during the first 20 minutes. But I am so glad we had those 20 minutes. Like, it makes the win all the sweeter. And not because we had to come through it, you know, triumphing over adversity. Not because it put things in perspective. You know, it shows the other side how bad it could have been. It's not that. It's not the contrast in emotions. It's the fact that Gary O'Neill would have had his little heart ripped out. Gary O'Neill was watching those first 20 minutes gleefully thinking, I've done it again. Sky Sports are right. I am a genius. It's the contrast of emotion for Gary O'Neill that made those 20 minutes worth it for me, Colin.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what really pissed me off in those 20 minutes, because my expectations were on the floor. The first 70 seconds, I was standing up and I was like, okay, we had the ball and we were in our shape and we were banging it around. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot we could do this. And could we do this against Wolves? It looks like we can. And even at one stage, the way that move broke down, Douglas Luiz played it behind Rodgers and it was so easily cut out and they were on the break. But I still had the feeling of, okay, if we can do that again, that will be fine. And we forgot how to do it for the next 19 minutes. And in one stage, I mean, Wolves didn't even have that many chances, but they had the, yeah, they were definitely on the front foot. And Aiton Nuri missed that big chance. And Gary O'Neill turned to the skies. He did that really annoying thing that really annoying young managers do when they want people to know, like, what else could I do? What more could we possibly be doing to win this? I've done everything and these players are letting me down. It's not a good look when managers do that, I don't think.
No, it's absolutely pathetic. And you're right, it's a very particular type of manager to do. That's one that, you know, might seem like he's confident, Conor, but always betrays himself in moments like that, where it's like he has to play up to the camera, he has to play up to the 40,000 people in the stadium to let them know that he is, in fact, a genius, and that Aiton Nuri is actually the cunt. Well, we all know, Conan, it's the other way around, apart from the genius bit.
We'll save some of it for WhatsApp whinges, I imagine. Who knows? I think we might come back to the first goal. Moussa Diaby is back, Liam. He is bookended the season with messy performances. I mean, they're not going to get carried away, as carried away as we did in the first half of the season, or the first eighth of the season. But Moussa Diaby looks like he is a baller again. And he's looking confident, and he's looking sharp, and he's linking with Bailey, and he's scoring goals. And this was great. This all started with a Douglas Luiz free kick, and at the stage I was thinking, shit, for God's sake, just shit. We know you can do it. I know he's a long way out. I know he's banging in the middle of the goals, but he plays it over the top to Leon Bailey on the left-hand side eventually. I mean, but like, it's so bad from Wolves as well, because not only is it delayed the run and the pass, but they just don't leave Bailey free. It's just a bad idea, and comes onto Bailey's left foot, and even though it's his weaker foot, he manages to volley it inside perfectly. It's deflected out. He's just taking a nick out to Diaby, who wraps that side foot around it and still manages to generate serious power. And for some reason, fantasy football did not give Leon Bailey the assist, and I am fuming about it, but absolutely delighted to see the ball go into the net in real life.
Yeah, the free kick when it eventually comes is gorgeous. And you're right, the fact that it's in the centre of the pitch nearly makes it all the better as well, because there's no angle for him there and he has to just lift it up eventually. And Bailey's run is so poorly timed that I just assumed he was offside. I nearly didn't celebrate the spank. I also nearly didn't celebrate it getting in because it was so fucking mental looking that he was there. Like, yeah. It looked like it went into the middle of the net. I couldn't understand what had happened. But the run is so poorly timed. Louise turns it down so much, I'm nearly thinking, but then I fall into the trap. I'm nearly thinking, Jesus, maybe Austin McPhee has concocted this. Maybe this is how they got Bailey free. Like, he does a dummy run, and everyone just thinks, oh, he's not actually getting it now because Louise has turned him down, and he plays at them anyway. What a genius. Yeah. But the strike when it comes to the Abbey, my God, like the conviction and the belief. Like, we haven't seen anything like that at Aston Villa since Remy Gard's first week, and he developed this unshakable belief that we were shite and full of shitheads and we're definitely going down, so didn't bother coaching us anyway. And he was right, and Jesus Christ, Bailey was right, or Diaby was right, they trust himself to spank that into the net. And then Jamie Redknapp was talking about it afterwards. He said Max Kilman there on the line, he's trying to do something, he's trying to get his head on it, but it just flashes past him. His fucking life flashed before him, I'd say. Never mind the ball. He sticks his head in that, he's dead.
Yeah, that's what I would call a vicious strike. It was such a rasper, but I don't even know if you can use the word rasper for a side-footed effort. That was so unique about it. Like, he has placed that, but he somehow managed to rasper it. It was just phenomenal technique and power that he got off that beautiful left foot. Keep it up, Diaby. 8 games to go. Keep that going and we'll be all right. The second goal, I mean, we must be at the stage now, Liam, where we're not throwing our eyes into our heads when we see the default subs coming on, when we see Zaniolo coming off the bench, because this guy is making a big difference, and he did make such a big difference today. And it was him and Luca Dean. It must have been their first touches down the left, and I have to say, it just felt better when you get to Moreno later on. But Luca Dean just felt a bit like he had control of the ball, which is in stark contrast to what Moreno served him. And even though Luca Dean eventually, it's a couple of nice touches, but then he ends up playing it off Saniolo's heels. Big Duran comes over and there's your three subs. Duran's not going to say no to a slide tackle halfway out the pitch. And he gets down, wins the ball, and then big Zaniolo's got his back in front of the defender and he drives, and he got such calmness as well. Even though he's driving, he weighs it up, he waits for the pass to emerge, gives it to Diaby. Konsa is on the overlap, and like, it's actually a good cross from Konsa. I know he's mishit it. I know it's gone into the net, but the weight on it's perfect. He's looked up. He saw where Duran is. And I have to say, Duran was very fucking confident that was going in. He's just watched it. He's watched the defender come past him as well. He's watched it hit off the post. He's just seen it go in, and rather than just charging into it, there was no chance that was going to be a Ronaldo Nani offside moment. Just throw yourself into that ball. He stood back and admired it.
Yeah, very strange. Zaniolo and John Duran looked fucking hungry when they came on, didn't they? I mean, that goal really summed it up. You haven't seen that sort of appetite since Gabby Agbonlahor was waddling around Villa Park in 2016. They actually both separately win the ball in the build-up to this. And like, not exactly a skill set you would traditionally associate with either player, for being honest. But after Zaniolo wins it back, we lose it again, and then Big John loses it. Loses it and thinks, fuck this, let's go. He comes out of nowhere with an inch-perfect slide and tackle. Looked like fucking Tyrone Mings. And then Zaniolo comes back in again with the aggression. And I don't know if it's fear or shock that has the Wolves player almost just standing there as Zaniolo's pirouettes out of trouble. It's absolutely incredible. And let's get one thing straight. Ezri Konsa is running at full speed. Like Diaby has, with good reason, rasped that ball under his feet. I mean, it's a brilliant first touch from Konsa. And then on the run, don't forget, he's lifted the ball over the keeper and the entire back line and dropped it down to within an inch, 2 inches maybe, of where he wanted it to go. It's an absolutely brilliant piece of football from everybody, including Ezri Konsa. And he deserves a few million people looking up the Villa result and seeing Konsa 65. And for those millions of people to think, what a week he's having. First he plays for England and now he has intentionally scored for Aston Villa.
Yeah, and like, he dropped it within an inch of where he wanted it. He dropped it within an inch of Duran, who was thinking, well, you didn't drop it to me, so I'm not going after that. But Duran had a big impact, delighted with him. And we got an offside goal as well in the first half, and it was a bit of lovely play. It was Douglas Luiz down to Rodgers on the left, and it's just nice. He just hits it into the space inside in front of Diaby, and he delays the pass. Yeah. Maybe he just delays it and plays it in front of Watkins, and Watkins misses. And then Douglas Luiz follows up and roosts it into the net. But part of me thought, because it's Watkins, maybe he should stay onside anyway. But nah, he was offside.
It's lovely football. Initially, the little pass inside to Diaby, the weight on it was absolutely perfect. I think it's Rodgers. And the frustrating thing there is that there's so much space between the centre halves and the goalkeeper on his line. Like, there was space everywhere. There are more gaps in the back line than in Rio Ferdinand's story about why he missed his drug test. And Diaby shouldn't be waiting for Watkins to see it and then make the run. Like, Diaby should see it and force him. Like, Diaby's looking at the pitch. He's looking at all those gaps. And I don't know why he's waited. He has to just roll that through and make Watkins go, oh, Jesus, it's on here. And he doesn't wait too long. Watkins has to give him the run. Doesn't come out far enough himself, Ollie. He should be bending that a lot better. Not a great finish. Keeper actually does well. Last time you'll probably ever hear me say that about Sa. And then Douglas Luiz follows it up brilliantly. It's a shame.
It is a shame, and it's a shame that Watkins went off injured at halftime as well. Like, that's a big blow. And Emery did say afterwards it's his hamstring. He said, hopes it's not too serious, but it's his hamstring, which doesn't sound great, to be honest. I don't think he's going to be available for Man City on Wednesday night.
Yeah, Wednesday night seems probably too short notice, but I mean, he didn't go down injured. Like, he's walked off the pitch. Maybe it's not that bad. He didn't look injured at any stage during the first half. Maybe he's just come off and he's felt a little twins there. Just needs to get it tightened up.
Yeah, and like, there is something to it. Like, it's squeaky bum time now. I joked about it a few weeks ago. I was being serious. It's war time. You know, the boys are going to have to bite through a bit of pain now to get us over the line. And I mean, one person that will do that, I imagine, is Watkins. And also, he doesn't want to get injured, but he wants to get into the Euro squad as well. I'm sure he wants to get to the Champions League. A lot of pressure from Spurs, from United. Villa need to keep taking the points board over. So, I don't know.
From United?
Yeah, well, they're winning again against Brentford. Absolutely hammered by them, and they're winning. I mean,
conceded an equaliser, Conan. It's 1-1.
Oh, stop. Are you serious? This should be a live stream. We should be doing a watch-along for these games. Did that actually happen?
That actually happened. I'm just surprised I was able to keep my composure for both of the goals.
Brilliant. Well, do you know what? Let's stop talking about it, because I don't want to go into WhatsApp whinges in too good a mood. So let's just... Let's just get there and we'll see what happens after.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
What's up, whinges? Douglas Ruiz knocked one straight out of play on the left-hand side from the centre circle. Moreno was free. Not that that really would have mattered if he had gotten it to him today. But Diego Carlos hit a pass out for a fucking goal kick from his own half. We can't be having that from Diego Carlos. And then Moreno with a cross went out for a goal kick as well. But probably none of them beat, in terms of fines, the Konsa shot. What did you think of that? it's such a good run, right? This is not a John McGinn shot, so he's not being fined for that. But as Nick on Twitter pointed out, that's bad enough to make you miss a cash spank. And I have to agree with him. So Konsa's made the run, and he's right. Bailey's not free. And anyway, he doesn't do the thing that we seem to be doing a lot in this game, is running to about 25 yards out and completely breaking down mentally and falling over the ball. Then, like, we just a few times, Rodgers, Diaby, we ran forward, options went out, like, we had nowhere to pass the ball to, and we did nothing. We just stood on the ball and got pushed over or fell over. Konsa at least caught inside then, which he was right to do. Bailey still wasn't on. Maybe the left footed shot wasn't on for Ezri Konsa, but he tried it anyway. He sliced it. Couldn't have been a worse slice. I mean, outside of the right foot would have been better. He had space, he had time. Like, that would have been a fine shot to take on. And it cut the John McGinn and Tyrone Mings in the crowd for a second time. And they were laughing. And you could tell they were laughing at Konsa trying a left-footed shot. And McGinn immediately clocked at the camera, came on to him, and he was still laughing, but he was like, ah, for fuck's sake, you know, it'll be too obvious if I stop laughing now. But he did say to Mings, and it was like, ah, oh, for God's sake. But then he couldn't stop laughing, so he kept laughing.
Yeah, I mean, if someone asked me what Theo Walcott's career was like, I'd show them those 5 seconds from Ezri Konsa. if you have time and space and aren't that bright like Theo Walcott, or aren't at all that left footed like Ezri Konsa, you'll do that. And you'll, when you've got that much time and space, and my God, did he have time and space? It was unbelievable. Yeah. He looked like he was lining up a free kick on his bad foot. I'm sure it felt like that when it came off as well. Absolutely ridiculous thing. And Mings and McGinn there as well. And luckily enough for us and for Ezri Konsa, that was the first Aston Villa game that Middlesbrough legend Gareth Southgate hasn't fucking appeared to, because the cameraman was all over the crowd tonight. Mings, McGinn, Juan Pablo Angel. Absolutely ridiculous stuff.
Mm. It really was. And at one second, it was 30 minutes into the match. It wasn't like this was pre-match. It cuts to Mings and McGinn, and they're drinking coffee. I'd say McGinn's drinking tea. And
Iron Brew, you'd say?
Iron Brew. And Mings waves, and the crowd love it. And then Mings is trying to lift up McGinn's hand to wave. And I'm thinking, the game is happening here. And he's not injured. It's not like he's been out since August. He's fucking suspended because he got a stupid red card a couple of games ago, and it's still 0-0, and we're being outplayed at the minute. McGinn was right to not raise his hand. I'd say going up in the Vyman meter, John McGinn.
Staying down in the Vyman meter, John McGinn's hand. Yeah, and that absolutely must be it. It's like John McGinn, like, as if John McGinn is coy all of a sudden. He dressed up as a fucking turkey. Like, John McGinn is the least coy person in the world. And anyway, John McGinn not realize whenever he's in Villa Park, the camera's on him for fucking 90 minutes? This isn't the time or the place to be worried about a fucking camera pointing at you. I hope he doesn't come back from this suspension and then realize that there's fucking cameras in Villa Park if this is how he's going to play afterwards.
The first WhatsApp whinge. Is Gary O'Neill the new Scott Parker? Imagine, right? Imagine in a home game of a top four team of Aston Villa and Unai Emery is the manager, like all the success and experience he has. And Gary O'Neill is shown more than him on the cameras. Wait, what is it? What is the fascination? I used to rep Gary O'Neill. You know, you sort of, not that we were having an argument about it, but you thought it was a bit too much of a loving for me when I was surprised that he wasn't nominated for Manager of the Year for his Bournemouth performance, and I thought he was hard done by for getting sacked by that team, the Cherries. I just realized how I pronounced it, so I wanted to stop myself from doing it again. But then the Cherries sacked him, and he went to Wolves, and he's done a good job there as well. He's obviously got something about him, but I have a line. I have a line, and it's often when people are yet to really prove themselves and it feels like their exposure and their hype is way above the level that they're at. Like Scott Parker, remember him? And Gary O'Neill was being interviewed before this game in the press conference, and he just needs to watch himself. He needs to be careful. Actually, he should watch himself less. I'd say that's part of his problem. He needs to mind his language, calm himself down a little bit, think about how he can come across. And he said, I've got a good idea of what they'll look like, definitely shape-wise, probably personnel-wise. They still have incredible players available. You know, but it's just the implication that, you know, I figured these boys out. I've already played them once, I'll do it again. And I didn't like the tone of what he was saying. And it reminded me of when he went on to Monday Night Football and gave his masterclass when they beat Man City. And he had one shot on target. And the stats were on the screen and he was standing over the stats. And they were actually asking him, how did you do it? And it's like, well, it looks like incredible bit of luck. That's how he did it. Because A, they've had one shot on target. And B, they scored two goals. So something's got lucky along the way. Ross on Twitter also pointed out something. He said, is there a better love story than Gary O'Neill and his iPad? I mean, I like stats. You know, I like to move around figurines digitally. But but there's a time place to watch a match, and generally for me it's when the match is happening. You should just sit and watch the match. I don't know, there's a bit of performative stuff going on with Gary O'Neill, and Sky are eating it up. They love it. The fact that he's been shown more and talked about more in a game that involves Villa and Unai Emery is a bit crazy to me. It doesn't add up, and it's probably just immaturity. It's probably just the youth in him. He's doing a good job overall, but cut that stuff out and I'll be back repping him, is what I say.
He's not fucking 18 years old, probably just a youth in him. What are you on about? He said there, you know I like stats. He didn't like fucking stats whenever you were repping Gary O'Neill for manager of the season, whenever he kept Bournemouth up. Fuck me. Like, Gary O'Neill gets this attention because he's an English manager. Young English manager, that's just what happens, Colin. They get this attention. It doesn't matter that they're playing a team that are fourth. It doesn't matter. That's clearly the storyline here. It's this game is about whether or not Aston Villa can go back into the top four. It's not about whether or not Gary O'Neill can get closer to Man United. By the way, Wolves are closer to Man United than Man United are to Aston Villa. I know you're repping Man United all fucking podcast as well. That's not what's a question here. Fucking it actually is. Kelly Cates was going there afterwards. When can we rule Man United out of this conversation that we're having about the top four? We're having the conversation about top four because Aston Villa are playing. It's nothing to do with the United Brentford game that's coming up. We can already answer that question. We can already talk about when Man United are in the top four. No, it's not going to happen. Man United cannot catch Aston Villa. Man United are fucking dreadful, and Gary O'Neill is an average manager doing an average job at an average club.
The second WhatsApp whinge: has the pass back rule ever been enforced?
No, Conan, that was not a pass back. That is not a pass back.
There has to be back. There has to be a cutoff point somewhere. Like, I've never actually seen a given ever.
There was whenever he tries to take that ball down and the ball gets away from him, and the commentator says he's tried to take that ball and the ball's got away from him. You can't punish him for that. You fucking can punish him for that. That is just a speculative ball dropping out of the air, and a Premier League footballer's first touch is so bad from the edge of his box that his keeper ends up picking it up. You can find a week's wages. Bring that into your list of wage fines, Conan, that you're doing. Never mind kicking the ball out of play when you're trying to pass to somebody. Trying to control the ball down to your own feet and your goalkeeper has to pick it up for you. That's pathetic.
My third and final WhatsApp whinge is, does Austin McPhee and Unai Emery think that we did a good job from defending corners tonight? Because I've been looking at the stats, Liam. I've been on my iPad at Wolves. Had four corners. Three of them led to shots. Now, it all started. Remember the first one, Torres tried a clearance and it gets cut out at the corner of our own box. It's just, I assume he tried to pass it out to Watkins maybe, but like we're penned in and his clearance doesn't make it past the 18-yard box, which is not good. And then eventually he's the one who blocks it, gives away the corner. Then the corner comes in and Watkins heads it clear. We've done the first job, but remember we said over and over, sometimes we can do the first job, then we forget about the second job because the ball drops to Tommy Doyle at the edge of the box and it's a free shot and it whistles by the post. And that's the first one. The second one comes in, and this is just after the 18-yard chance, and it's a deep corner, and it's a header that's won, and thankfully it just bounces in front of Martinez. And then the other one that I can remember that they got a shot on goal was the ball that got whipped in, and Molina gets a free header 6 yards out. Yes, he's to the other side of the near post, so he would have had to do a Tyrone Mings-style header to get his neck around it, and he heads it wide, but it's still a free header. He's still on the 6-yard line. And I still don't think that we've done anything to improve our defending from corners.
No. This has always been the big thing. It's the chances that we're giving away from corners, not necessarily just the goals. It's the huge amount of chances that are just being coughed up. And was there another one in the second half when... Oh, was it Lamina had a diving header, a powerful header? Did he cut too well, Conan? It just went whistling past the post.
Well, this is probably it because I saw four corners and I was like, shit, I've only taken down three. So like, I need to work more on my iPad, really.
But just going back to that Torres clearance, like I'll have to assume that attempted clearance, like the flat trajectory out of the box, was worth it. Because if it didn't hit the first man 10 yards away inside our box, it was putting Watkins one-on-one with Sa. That has to have been the payoff for Torres. It has to have been a direct goal-scoring opportunity from Watkins because that was bonkers. And because he had so much time as well. He had time to take another touch. He had time to look up. He had definitely had time to think it. But he's almost drilling it out of the box. Very, very strange. And you're right, that's the one that ends up with Doyle having a spank. And it just whistles past the post straight after that, I think. It's like he gets a great touch out of his feet. And he actually does well to get the shot away so quickly because he's got Leon Bailey closing him down with all his defensive prowess at the edge of the box.
All right, let's take a break there and we'll come back with the award categories.
And he was given out about the instinct to assume that they're guilty. That's because we can see the team that you're fielding. That's because we can see that a club with the fans who can just about create the same level of atmosphere as Denmark versus Tunisia in Qatar, a club like that shouldn't be able to spend £400 million on defenders in 3 years. Pep Guardiola knows that his legacy is in question here. Pep Guardiola is so terrified of people on Twitter that call him Fraudiola. And like, listen, some of those people have a point. I mean, in his last season at Barcelona, he had Messi running around scoring 73 goals. But Pep led them to second place, 9 points behind fucking eye gouger Mourinho's Real Madrid. And were knocked out of the Champions League by Roberto Di Matteo's Chelsea. Roberto Di Matteo's Chelsea. his first year at treble winners, Barron, they were beaten 5-0 by Real Madrid in the Champions League. He didn't even win the double in his second season. Oh, but he played Philipp Lahm out of position. You know who didn't play Philipp Lahm in midfield? Treble winner Jupp Heynckes. Do you know who had to play Philippe Coutinho in midfield? Treble winner Hansi Flick. Roberto Di Matteo's Chelsea. Bayern Munich have won the last 10 titles. It doesn't matter who the manager is. Niko Kovac won the double in his only full season. He was hounded out by November the following year. Do you know who he's managing now? Of course you don't. He's just some manager. Any manager who took over and won the double. It's not a league, it's a fucking procession. Bayern Munich literally take the best player from the second best team. From the second best team in the same league. It's insane. They signed Goetze in Pep's first year. Then Lewandowski the following year. Then they left him alone for a year. And then they signed Mats Hummels. Can you imagine if City signed Salah in 2018 and then Mane, and then the following year signed Van Dijk? The Bundesliga is a fucking joke. And regardless of how good a coach Guardiola is, no matter how well he's taken Cruyff's template and superimposed better players onto it, anyone could do what he did at Bayern, as demonstrated by the fact that everybody has.
Going to start with a quick whistle stop tour of the Peter Engelman What the Fuck Award. And really, I think it was Kanza and Tielemans doing battle for this one all night. And they combined for probably the worst one. It was just Kanza down the right-hand side. And it was a tight pass into the middle. Tielemans was surrounded. It wasn't a fully accurate pass. And, you know, fair enough. We play a lot of tight passes anyway. But Tielemans... don't react by falling over. Don't react by, when you're falling over, trying to pass it back to Konza and failing to do so. Instead, passing it back behind Konza and letting them piss down the pitch. There were a lot of little moments. I thought, like, Tielemans was weird enough tonight, wasn't he? Because he was doing his best Kamara on a bad day impression. He was losing that ball in that Kamara spot, like that Kamara seemed to be doing once or twice a game, every other game for a while. And Tielemans was just losing it sometimes, but he was getting back. He was playing some nice passes. I still liked seeing him on the pitch the whole game, but there were just a couple of times that he left us exposed. And at one stage, the commentator was praising him for his cover and tackle. I think he caught it out on Nuri, maybe. A brilliant tackle, and he played a class pass down the right-hand side to Bailey, and Bailey went on one-on-one, and we got a chance from it. Tielemans gave that ball away. He was covering for himself. He was getting praised for his cover and tackle, for giving the ball away. But in fairness, he did get back and win.
Yeah, that was particularly strange. I mean, he does do brilliantly to win it back. But even the tackle was very strange as well. Like, he kind of goes in.
Fell into him, sort of.
Fell into him with his left foot inside the box as well. It's like, whoa, you're in. Let's relax here, pal, for a second. But then the pass was absolutely spectacular down to Leon Bailey.
Unbelievable.
It was like he found his range, because the 12-yard pass to Ezri Konsa was too difficult for him, and he just rolled it straight to Nuri to put him streaming through on goal.
Yeah, well, let's go to the Rosenthal Award, and the first nomination is Aiton Urie. It was a cross from the right, and Torres is in the Mings role, keeping everybody onside, and Bailey, God love him, is just not interested in that sort of stuff, picking up a left-back in the box. You know, and Aiton Urie just can't believe it. I think it's Tielemans that heads it through, the cross comes in, and it's headed through to the Wolves left-back, lands at his feet, he can't believe it. Dead at his feet. The hole of the net is there to put the ball into. Martinez just spreads himself desperately, and Aiton Urie hits it low in his legs. He can't believe his luck. It's really good for Martinez, but Jesus, he really could have put that ball anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, talking about Theo Walcott earlier on, I mean, Aiton Urie had more time to think about that than Paul Mitchell had to think about Jack Grealish scoring the winner when he was sitting in his jail cell all night. And look, It's easy to slag off Eaton Ury as well, but it's absolutely brilliant for Emmy Martinez to throw the second most famous left leg in world football into the air and get his big thigh on that as well. And he stays up so long, and he could come rushing out. He could do a whole pile. He could do a whole lot there. But I think what he does right is he asks Eaton Ury to find the corner. He asks Eaton Ury to make a decision. And that's the thing about players who aren't that good or aren't that comfortable in front of goal. If you ask them to make a decision, they'll make a bad decision more likely, or they'll panic. They'll not hit the ball as cleanly as they want. They'll be thinking, I better just get this ball on target. And sure enough, what they do is they get the ball on target, but typically that means hitting it straight at the fucking goalkeeper.
Ollie Watkins, eh? I mean, the Tiedemann's pass to Watkins is just brilliant. It's so intentful. It's so sharp. It's so accurate. And the first touch is perfect. And not that that even matters, because Watkins wanted another 10 seconds to weigh up his options anyway. I think the touch takes him through, and he takes it onto his left then for some reason, narrows his own angle, draws the defender in to put a bit more pressure on himself, and then he scoops it with his left foot into the side, and that's so disappointing.
The pass is absolutely out of this world and completely at odds with everything we had just done in the match up to that point as well. Yeah. It's an absolutely ridiculous pass to even see it. I think the cameraman was struggling to catch up with where it was going. Like, it's just one touch block pass through four people. Absolutely ridiculous. And maybe it is worth passing it to Eaton Ury as he screams free on goal every once in a while, Connor, for a pass like that. Yeah. But initially, when I saw him take that second touch, I thought, like you, Conan, what are you doing, son? But I think the first touch just needs about an extra 3 inches on it. I don't think he can have a shot with any sort of conviction. Not that the second touch gave him a shot with any sort of conviction afterwards, so maybe I'm talking shit. But I think the first touch, it just... Yeah, he just can't convince himself that he can get a decent shot away. That's why he takes the second touch. That's why he gives himself the worst angle. Probably should have thought about something a bit more interesting to do. Maybe he should have tried the toe poke with his right foot. But I think once he takes that touch and it's not absolutely perfect, second touch is probably always going to be on his mind.
I don't know, even if his second touch took him across the defender or something, it was like sort of Martinez thing. He wanted the keeper to make his mind up for him, and the keeper had angles right, and he didn't know what to do the second touch, and he took the wrong decision anyway. The third nomination is, this is after Watkins did this lovely, straight after that chance, just that deep step that he takes. So he's coming out the pitch towards the centre circle, but he plants his right foot and just takes the ball towards the goals in the other direction. It's so explosive coming off that plant. And he's just driving in at the goals, and he drags it to the left, and Moreno is completely free. And Jesus Christ, and the first touch bobbles up. I don't know why that's happened. And now you're thinking, okay, well, you messed up the first touch, but at least it's bobbling up for you, so you can just lash it towards the goals, lash it across with loads of people in there. And he just sides footed over everybody to the other side of the pitch. He just crosses it out of the box. He's in the box. Watkins has put him through. And he's just not interested in the goals. He's not seemingly trying to find anybody in a way that would help them score a goal. He just lofts it up, and it just glides out away from the danger. It was so frustrating, and it was just during a period that he was really annoying me.
You mean the entirety of the time he was on the pitch?
Yeah, just during that 60-minute period.
Yeah, it is a strange thing that people will refuse just spanking the ball because they think they're being clever by floating the ball into the general direction of some Aston Villa. Unless you're picking somebody out, have the fucking shot. I mean, like, it's not like he was passing that to Konsa. He was just he was literally just tossing that into the mixer. But what is the point of that? Just toss it into the mixer with fucking venom, hit it, smash it at the goalkeeper, hit it across the post, do something more. Like, tossing the ball up into the air and hoping your right back is going to jump 7 foot into the air and nod it back down into the ground. The ball's already on the ground for you, pal. Just have a fucking shot.
Yeah, like the respect for Jose Sa is incredible. I mean, like, the respect for goalkeepers in general is mad. Like, if he has that shot there and misses, nobody sees it. He's in the position. That's why Watkins has played it to you. Like, Watkins has put you through because you're free in the box. If he misses that, all that happens there is that's clipped together as a positive move from Aston Villa. It's like, you know, here's some of the good things we did against Wolves. Bang, bang, bang. Watkins did really well. We find the man. Shot saved. Well done, boys. And we move on. That's all that's happened. That's highlighted as a really positive. Instead, no, that's going to go into the negative category where it's like, we had a big chance here. And look what this brain dead Dodo has done. He's kicked the ball. He's gone and gotten himself fined. And actually, it was compounded because Wolves broke up the pitch then from what should have been a goal for us. And Tielemans has to drag somebody down. Maybe he didn't have to, but he wasn't bothered running after him at that stage. And he got a yellow card. So we should have a goal. Instead, we have a yellow card for one of our two centre midfielders.
Yeah, and I think that was actually born out of frustration for Tielemans, just because that was a big chance, because of a huge chance as well that he's just created for Ollie Watkins. But that's from his absolutely incredible pass that Tielemans is just pissed off, and rightly pissed off, I would say. And then he's just got his left back turning up, like, as you said, a brain dead extinct animal.
Last nomination of the first half was Torres headed on a Leon Bailey in swinger. Just not enough on us, but that was a big chance to get away. It just kept it straight at the keeper.
What sort of fucking product does this lad have in his hair? Extreme mold? Like, he takes all the power off the cross with that. So he's just back, like a little cushion header back to the goalkeeper. Ridiculous. Yeah.
And then the second half was a bit slower, but it was sort of comfortable for it. Like 10, 15 minutes whizzed by the third lad half, like you wouldn't believe. And then Zaniolo had two chances straight after the second goal. We sort of got our chances after we got this. The double their lead, and the first one of Zaniolo's is the best. I think it's the lovely ball back from Duran. He sort of cuts it back to Diaby. He lays it on to Zaniolo and he gets it under the legs of the defender, and it saves a good save from the keeper. The second one's it's a Douglas Luiz ball over the top. It's a very big up and under. It's coming down, you know, it's not a lot he can do with it there. He gets it on to his left on a tight angle and he just has a lash at it. I think it gets a corner That's exactly what you can do from these positions.
That is exactly what you can do from these positions. You're right. And he takes it down so well. It's a shite pass from Douglas. Yeah. He's like, what are you doing, mate? Like, you're better. Like, that's like a child playing five-a-side who's just dicking around. It's like, no, keep the fucking ball on the ground. Let's pass it around. Just lift it into the air and hope that your centre midfielder can take it down like that and volley it into the net. He does really well to get the shot on target. And you're right, he wins a corner from smashing the ball at the goalkeeper. Who would have thought that? And the first one as well, from the pullback, big John Duran again comes trundling in with a sliding tackle out of fucking nowhere to win the ball back initially to set this up. I'm starting to think, the way the two of these lads played after they came on, I'm thinking, who needs Tim? Tim coming on, just get these two lads on and the destroyer roles in midfield. Fuck around with him.
They're up for it anyway. Like that's one thing you can say about these lads. Diego Carlos had a goal, but he just let the ball go by him. Douglas Luiz whips in a gorgeous corner, and it's just right there for Carlos. But he just doesn't try to head it for some reason. It goes and hits off a Wolves player.
It's like he was so interested when that Douglas Luiz will finally score a corner kick again, and he was just letting it go by. I wonder where this is going. Stick your neck in it, pal.
The only other chance, and this is the only other Wolves chance, really. So we had the Aiton Uri one, which in fairness is probably the winner ahead of Watkins, right? And the only other chance was the Matt Doherty header at the end. He should have scored that, but by God, he wasn't going to, you know, try a leg to get over that ball. That would have been too much effort for him.
Hey, Matt Doherty takes it upon himself to just play centre forward as well. I can absolutely guarantee that wasn't the manager's instructions. That's not going to stop our Matt from just wandering up the field out of position.
You have Aiton Uri ahead of Watkins, right?
Absolutely. That's the miss of the season, Connor.
The Paul Merson, that is just filthy award. It has to go to Morgan Rogers. I mean, he intercepted this ball. Might have been ahead of Tommy Doyle. And he pirouettes as he's intercepting, pirouettes away from the challenge, runs towards another tackle, and he just switches the feet from left to right to skip by that tackle. Then he's having his arm pulled by Aiton Uri, and he's still holding him off as he's being pulled back, and he's still charging forward, holding him off, and then eventually he goes back and goes around him and just really carries on running forward. And eventually Saribia just grabs his shirt and just says, right, that's enough. You've gone past too many of our players. You've advanced too far up the pitch. It should be two yellows, but the ref bottled it and only gave one.
Yeah, absolutely disgraceful from the referee. I mean, that should have been an iconic moment. Like, this is the type of thing that we always are. Why doesn't the ref just do that? You know, like when somebody gets fucked and dives, why can't they give the free kick and the yellow card for the diver? Why does he have to only punish the terminal foul? He can punish both of them. It's two yellow cards. If Rodgers goes on and passes that, he is going to book. Is it 8-0? If 8-0, he was all over the fucking place during this game. What the fuck?
He was. Maybe that's the role Matt Doherty came in fairness.
But it's something really strange happened. Morgan Rogers just woke up this morning, was sitting there eating his cornflakes or his pasta, whatever it was, and was just thinking, looking into the distance, thinking, I wonder, can I just run past everybody today? He did it about three times. Every time he got the ball, he was just floating through the pitch. And you're right. He did end up running out of ideas, literally running out of time as the ball was taken off him when he got towards the edge of the box. But his dribbling this morning, or today, this afternoon, was like fucking prime Messi. It was ridiculous. Mm. He was wandering through the middle of the pitch like it was absolutely no bother to him. Like, absolutely incredible performance of carrying the ball up the pitch.
Yeah, no, it was something clicked of him. I did have him going up on the Vimanometer as well, just for realizing that he's stronger than everybody else. So even if he's under pressure, he'll just hold him off. And then he'll eventually be able to spin out and just dribble past people again. It was good to see him leaning into the stature that he has. He's got an Aller nomination in this category. I think that dribble is going to be the winner of the Paul Merson Award. But he also flicked one on with his heels to Watkins. Now, in fairness, like that required a good touch and good strength from Watkins in that position that he was in to actually get the ball under control. But it was nice to see somebody just flick their feet out to the side of their hips. And then Bailey had a lovely arrowed ball across the pitch to Moreno. And this was after he was running down the right wing. And sometimes now with Bailey, it's so magic to watch because you think he's in trouble and you think he's running a road and he's taken a few too many touches and he's able to turn and go in any direction and he runs over the ball and he comes back at it. And then this one, he turns the defender and then stops. But then what happens then is he just starts sprinting again. And he sprints into like the danger area that the defender thinks he won't go to, because like once he stops and once he's managed to turn around, when he's in these positions of trouble, the defender thinks, oh, my job's done here. Now I've got him stood up. And now he realizes that there's a block in front of him. And he just charges at him anyway, and he goes by him. And the defender, there's just no respite for these boys. It's lousy to watch these fullbacks trying to cope with him. And as he charged by him, he just pinned this ball just with like his laces straight like a die across the pitch to Moreno, and then probably got crossed out for a corner or something, or a goal kick.
Yeah, there was one as well where he picked the ball up in the corner flag and then he's carrying it. He starts carrying it towards the edge of our box instead of running down the line. It's like, where are you going? Ah, you're grand. There you go. You're through. You're past him. And he's just got 15 yards of space in front of him. It's like he picks the man with the space behind him so he can just drift into that space. It doesn't matter that he now has to go towards a man. He's like, if I just go around him, which I will, then that'll open the pitch up. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, actually, that brings us all nicely to the Tim Sherwood replay, two number 10s and bamboozled them award, because I think Austin McPhee, in fairness to him, has come up with a great idea from free kick. So at the start of the second half, we had one on the right-hand side. Douglas Louise just sort of tapped it to Leon Bailey. And he did that sort of disguise that I've taken the free kick, but nobody knows. But the reason this is so effective, it's because it's Leon Bailey one-on-one with the defender now. Like, that's a great idea. Everybody else is inside. There's one player out on the wall to try and block the cross that's coming in. But instead, why don't we just get Leon Bailey one-on-one with the defender? Like, all these routines that we do that end up with somebody having a 25-yard shot, this is the effective one. Have Leon Bailey one-on-one with the defender. He'll go by him like he did, crossed it in to a player like he did, and Carlos just misses it and he's offside. He should have gotten on the end of it at least. But, I mean, that's a great routine, in fairness to Austin.
Yeah, any routine that involves Diego Carlos being 3 yards offside is a really, really spectacular routine, all right? No, but the interesting thing about this is it didn't really work. Like, the Wolves fullback caught on to it and was out. You know, it's not like we had an extra a yard of time. You know, it's not like Bailey was freed up there for a couple of split seconds because he didn't realize that Douglas Luiz touched it. The defender knew he touched it, but like you said, it doesn't matter because it's a great routine because it's Leon Bailey one-on-one with a defender. So it doesn't matter if the defender knows that it's happened or not. He's fucked. He's fucked now because Leon Bailey has got him with all his teammates 40 yards away inside the box. Good night.
And then for the Ulike Glenn Whelan taking 90th minute penalty routine, it is also routine award. It's for two set piece routines. And both of them again are free kicks. One of them's on the right hand side. Konsa, we were given cash stick. Is this part of the right back's role to come over and talk to the players as they're lining up for free kicks? We thought it was a bit of overzealousness from Matt Cash. Konsa's over talking to Dougie and Bailey. After the whistle has gone, the referee said, okay, hit the free kick. And Konsa's still over chatting there and then walks his way up to the near of the setup. He's not involved in the setup. I would have thought one benefit of having three centre halves on the pitch was for set pieces that we could get Konsa on the end of it. But he's just behind the wall, cross it in there, lads, go ahead. And then for one that we actually had a shooting range from it, Tielemans, Dougie, Luca Dean, Bailey, they're all standing over it. They're all in shooting range. And Konsa's over talking to them. And they actually seem to be listening to him. Like, they were sort of shooing Matt Cash away. But I don't know what Konsa would be saying to them. Like, yeah, I'd take a shot there if I was you.
Yeah, what I was thinking when I was watching this is like, oh, hopefully this is the right back's role. The right back is just assigned with this job now to go out and cause confusion and talk to the free kick takers, maybe cause a bit of potential panic in the Wolves defenders' minds. Should they be following Konsa as he wanders back? And all I was thinking is, oh, thank fuck. So it wasn't actually just Matt Cash going out and asking, could he take it? That's great news. Matt Cash probably wasn't out there demanding to take a set piece. I am so delighted now to see that Konsa's out there doing it as well.
Yeah, Matt Cash, in his absence, is going up on the Vimer meter a lot this week. Okay, the John Gregory, if I had a gun, I would have shot him award. Credit to Jack on Twitter who sent this one on to us. It was in the program notes. And it was Unai Emery, Liam. Of course it was Unai Emery, a perennial winner of this award. And he said before the game, he said, I don't like the word pressure. Pressure is what teams feel to avoid relegation. Or even in everyday life, the real pressure is what every family feels to get income to raise a family. We don't have pressure. We have an opportunity. That is just magic.
Yeah, it's absolutely magic. It's paraphrasing someone else, I believe, as well, though. Pressure is nothing more than... Pressure's nothing more than the shadow of great opportunity. I think some other athlete has maybe said that before as well. But like, you know, kind of standing on the shoulders of giants, and someone as the stature of Unai Emery standing on a giant's shoulder, kind of, you know how he's reaching high enough for you to bring up his quote in the John Gregory, if I had a gun, I would have shot him, quote of the week award. I mean, if it's being nominated in that category, kind of, you know it's something special. And it is. It's a lovely quote. It's an absolutely lovely quote from Unai Emery. And he's right. Yeah.
I think he said it better than Michael Johnson. I think it's the athlete that you're talking about. I think when Unai Emery says it, I sit up and I listen more. But it is important. It's great to know that you have a manager like that, right? And I don't mean somebody who gets, you know, dragged into the fear and the anxiety, and obviously that spreads through your team anyway, but it's actually about reprogramming the team in everything they do. We've seen it before, remember, like, you know, in games that they're under pressure and they get pissed off that they stop playing the way that he wants them to play. Like, that's what he is working on every day with these boys. It's every time we have the ball, we have an opportunity. Like, and what can we do with the ball to try and score? And like, doing that helps you as well. Like, that helps the conservative side of what you want. You know, people want to go out and defend and they want to protect what you have, but actually by pushing forward and actually being able to attack is the best form of defense and all that. But it is, in a way, and especially if you score goals like we're doing as well. And it's great to know that, like, he's trying to reprogram the team, especially now with 8 games to go. They need to, like, we're not going to get into the Champions League by just hanging on. I mean, United will catch us.
Yeah. United are absolutely sure to win 4 more games than Aston Villa are in the last 8 games of the season. And it's funny as well, you're talking about the way we were playing there and trying to score goals. It was actually really frustrating in those first 20 minutes as well. It was like our players were attempting far too many killer balls as well. It was like we forgot how we actually play. We have to play it into position to have the killer ball. You know, we can't just be trying that from 80 yards out whenever the other team is so deep. And I was thinking, is there less movement? Are the off-the-ball runs not as aggressive, not as regular? Is it the shape? Is it the personnel? But then I realised it probably is those last 3 or 4 things. But luckily enough, after that, Morgan Rodgers really came into the game. Like, Morgan Rodgers was able to take on that Jacob Ramsey role. He was able to have a more of a connection between the deeper line midfielders and the forward players. Tielemans was able to get the ball slightly higher as well and start playing his passes. And more importantly, Diaby was coming deeper and actually getting on the ball and turning. And that definitely got us back into our rhythm. It reminded us how we're supposed to play. It reminded us how we're supposed to play at home. And then we just blew them away after that. Like, once we were able to play that way, once Rodgers settled into the game, settled into the system, understood it a bit more, we were away and never looked back.
Well, let's do the Vyman meter. I'm going to get out of the way the one person I have going down, and it's Alex Moreno. I thought it was a really, really bad performance, but it was more attitude-wise as well. Like, yes, it felt like every time Villa went down the left, Wolves came out with a throw-in. Like, that was really frustrating. His touch was all off. His crossing was atrocious. His decision-making was bad. I felt like his effort wasn't great either. He was often, I know he made a couple of tackles down at left back, but just often they were in behind him, and it's a demanding role. I get that. But I was surprised that he lasted 60 minutes. I was actually really, when he pushed someone over at the edge of the box, in the D at the edge of the box, like, such a pathetic, lazy move. So somebody's running across the box. There's a line of 3 Villa players, and they're just making their way out to the right because, you know, they're running out of road, really. Every other Villa player is shifting. They're shifting their feet. And Moreno just puts 2 hands on him and pushes him over. So what? Gives him a free kick at the edge of the box. It's 1-0 at this stage. I think that was unbelievable. And, like, I was actually annoyed at Emery because it was so clear for about 20 minutes, like, this guy needs to come off. He probably wouldn't do that, and you'd expect somebody who's such a high-level performer to be able to rectify it and get themselves back into the game. But when he didn't do it after 45 minutes, get him out of there. We're paying somebody 130 grand, a left-back, to sit on the bench and oversee this. Get him in there. Tell him to earn his money this week. Get him in and play. And look at Dean did well when he came on, but, geez, Moreno was bad. And, like, I don't often say that because I'm a big fan of him, but he was off it today, and I was so happy to see him get out of there.
Yeah, and you find a lot of players there at the top of WhatsApp windows as well for overhead passes that went straight out of play. But do you think those 3 passes that went over the top of Moreno's head in the first half from Carlos, Luis and Konsa, well, because those 3 players subconsciously didn't really want to give him the ball because he was playing so shit. I mean, that's the only explanation. They were such bad passes. That's what I was thinking. They're like, oh, he's free, but I really want to pass it to him. And then they just fuck up the pass because they're thinking about that. Not that it would have mattered. Had they pinged it straight to his toe anyway, he would have miscontrolled it. Probably would have stood in the ball, slipped and fell on his face. He was having such a bad game. It was comical. So, like, completely inexplicable as well. He's never played that badly before, apart from his first 2 or 3 games. It was absolutely... Yeah. It was awful. It was a terrible all-round performance. His on the ball was dreadful. And you're right. Like, it's not that he gets caught out. He's not playing in a traditional left-back position. That space is there. That's the risk we're taking. That is how Aston Villa play. That's not nothing to do with Moreno. But he seemed to be off the pace and getting back at times as well. It was like, you know, he was confused by it. A couple of times where he's just put his head down and ran back into position without knowing where the ball was, really, as well.
Yeah.
Strange performance.
Yeah, and to your point, there was one time that Torres had the ball and Moreno was completely free, and Torres was, like, in their half as well, and he saw him and he came in field. He was like, no, we've done this too much. That's the sort of brains and ball skill that you have with Torres there, just, you know, playing like game state, understanding. Going up on the Vyman meter, Morgan Rodgers, like you say, I thought he was really good, really strong. it didn't last that long in the grand scheme of things, but he was very effective in terms of his dribbling, which is what we needed, and Zaniolo as well. I mean, yeah, like it's sort of, you know, said in jest a little bit, like big Zaniolo, but he's big and he's strong. And like you were talking about the defender when he pirouetted and he was obviously just planted the defender there so he could run away for the goal, but it was like shockwaves coming off his back. The defender couldn't cope with the power that was being generated off big Zaniolo. And yeah, putting himself about as well. I know on another day that would frustrate us because he mistimed a couple of things and tried too hard, but I have to say he's having a great impact recently.
Yeah, and there's another one where he's running out towards the ball with Semedo, and Semedo goes in for a shoulder tackle, and Zaniolo doesn't move at all, and Semedo actually bounces back off him. The power of the man is absolutely ridiculous. And I'm just worried now that he's trying to make sure that Aston Villa, you know, that Aston Villa go ahead and sign him now in the summer by performing for the last 8 games. But I've seen people do this type of thing before, Conan. I'm not sure, but it'd have to be an unbelievable 8 games to convince me to want to spend money on him. Don't be fooled now, keep an eye on him. Keep an eye on his attitude.
Moussa Diaby's obviously going up. It's been a good few weeks for him, in fairness. Good timing. And I've got John Duran going up. The only thing about John Duran, right, and we love chaos. He's obviously potent, he's dangerous, he's a good player to have around the place. He's arguing with the ref there, right? After he gets his free for holding off his man, and you can see the ref saying that to him, like, I give you the free. He's holding off his man on the centre circle, we're back to the walls, we're 2-0 up. The free is the best thing he could have hoped for in that situation. In that position, he's under pressure, somebody's fouling him, but he's strong, they hold him off, he's just trying to get the ball under control, and he does it well. It was Watkins-esque. Brilliant, take the free and move up the pitch. And then roaring and shouting at the ref and following him up the pitch, arguing with him. And then, you know, maybe we can't take that out of him. Like, maybe it just won't happen. But I don't know, this boy. And referees are not really like him as well, which isn't a good thing, you know?
Yeah, it's not like big men need to give referees a reason to not give them a marginal call or free kick, you know? You need all the help you can get, John. You'll learn that eventually. But maybe that's all he was saying to Tierney. It's like, this isn't the first time you should have been giving me this 3 or 4 times. And that's true. There's a couple of times where he was just kind of thrown to the ground. As he's back, it's really easy to throw somebody to the ground as they're backing up. And maybe it was just people stepping out of the way. And maybe he just felt embarrassed because he ended up on his arse. But, you know, like every once in a while, he is being fouled. And he was so adamant that I'm willing to believe him. And I would definitely believe him to his face as well.
Kane Kessler has to go up. I mean, we've all been waiting for this guy to break through. Good to see him getting his Premier League debut today. I think they said it was his first game for Villa since that FA Cup match where we played all the youngsters during COVID. And he tweeted afterwards, actually, he said, since the age of 8, it's been a dream of mine to play for this club. After 13 years, step by step, league by league, that dream has come true. A very proud moment for me and my family. Thank you all. And a massive 3 points. I mean, it's a great tweet, great sentiment. He has been on a great journey. He's a good player, so it's good to see him come through.
Yeah, not good enough to be nominated for the John Gregory. If I had a gun, I would have shot him cold of the week, apparently, though. Jesus, Conan. It's fucking Premier League debut, and you're doing that to him?
I mean, come on, we've got Michael Johnson times Unai Emery. It's going to be hard to beat that. I've got Konsa and Tielemans going up now. The reason that they were both nominated for what the fuck performance, just for individual errors, but this is the beauty of the Weimann meter. I just feel like I still liked what they were both giving me out there, and it was non-stop effort, and it was pretty good on the whole as well, and they were both potent, and they were both doing good things. They were making mistakes, and mistakes shouldn't define how you play overall. I mean, that's what good players do. Paul McGrath had him in a few years ago when I was working at the TV station in Ireland. We had him over for an interview, and he said about the amount of mistakes he made, but it was something, and I'm paraphrasing, but nobody really remembered those. They remembered all the good stuff that he did. And it's like, yeah, that's what happens, you know, when you're a really good player, you end up doing way more stuff that outweigh the mistakes. Like you say, Tielemans pass, it's worth every so often letting somebody through, especially if you're going to run back and make up for that same mistake. And Kahn's is a good man to make up for his own mistakes as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Mistakes shouldn't define how you play. According to you, it just defines your weekly salary. But, you know, it's absolutely fine for a player of the flair of Yuri Tielemans to make a mistake, to misplace a pass. There was even one where he drills it through because he can't resist it. He's like I said before, he drills it straight at John Durant's feet whenever the pass is on to Zaniolo, who's nearly through on goal as well. But Tielemans just thinks Zaniolo's going to pull that back to John Durant, so I'll just fucking play it to John Durant from 70 yards out instead. But it's worth a flare like that to be losing the ball every once in a while, and it's absolutely fine for a player like Konsa to lose the ball because his recovery, pace, power, defending ability is good enough for him never to really suffer from the mistake.
Look, it's a good day, great win. We're bouncing forward and we've got a massive match now on Wednesday night. I feel like you're going in there now with a bit less pressure. And we got that kind of what you would say a last second draw against West Ham and got the win against Wolves, the ropey one, and we got a good performance as well, more than anything. We're wounded, but we are not out. We're bouncing on to Man City. We've already beaten them once. We're going in there. Could be an ambush. Who knows? Let's just look forward to it. As these Lions do, they hunt their predators. We are the apex. Let's go to City and see what we can do. Let's see how happy I am after that match. Enjoy the start of the week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.